Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you since 1997 on KKUP Radio with over 250 guests and still going strong in their 12th year of weekly broadcasting, the International Taz and Paula Show brings to you expansive, engaging, and groundbreaking intensity on radio and now on the internet airwaves today. Listen live every Thursday or visit Embracing Mother Earth's archives, exclusive articles, ask questions, and receive actual answers from guests anytime at TazandPaulaShow.com. Taz and Paula's special guests are experts coming from all walks of life, energizing our lives with a passion that inspires and teaches us with each of their compelling personal life journeys, with roots from ancient wisdom and bridging it with modern science. We hope today's show touches the wisdom of your heart. And now, Taz and Paula.
Well, good morning. Over the last couple of years, we've been hearing wonderful things about our special guest today, and that's Dr. Todd Ovakides, who is often called Dr. Todd by his associates. He has had a passion for science from the time he was 5 years old, and his passion has rippled ever since then. You are now listening to the Taz and Paula Show, and I'm Paula, and we're waiting for Taz to come in on the show. And so here is Taz. Wait a minute. Good morning, Taz.
Good morning, Paula. How are you?
Oh, I'm wonderful. And I've just told our listening audience that we're going to be interviewing Dr. Todd Ovakides, affectionately known as Dr. Todd. So this is really exciting. Go ahead, Taz.
Well, it really is exciting for us and our listeners to meet Dr. Todd today. Dr. Todd developed a passion for finding better solutions and worked toward this throughout his medical training, formally educated at Northwestern University, where he was first in his class of 1800 with a 4.0 grade point average. And from Northwestern, he was accepted into a combined accelerated undergraduate medical school program at the highly esteemed Johns Hopkins University. And following this training, he completed an internship residency and chief medical residency in the Georgetown University Hospital System. excuse me. This was followed by a 2-year fellowship in pulmonary and intensive care medicine, also at Georgetown University Hospital. And towards the end of his fellowship, he became aware of the benefits of holistic medicine for improving the function of the immune system rather than impairing the function of other systems with toxic treatment. Inspired to learn more, he moved to Southern California to study with practitioners of complementary medicine. And in the context of these studies, he had an experience so radical that the course of his life and work were forever transformed.
Well, I bet we're going to hear about that today. At Georgetown, Dr. Todd participated in formal studies of T-cell immune function after harvesting lymphocytes from the lung via fiber optic bronchoscopy. In addition, this training involved intensive care of many persons afflicted with HIV infection, as the lung is a common target following the immunologic breakdown of this condition. Aware of the extreme limitations of treating HIV through ordinary conventional means, Dr. Todd began to search for less intrusive solutions. The concept of using the subtle differences of genetic organization between the viral and human genes was the launch point for exploring new avenues of molecular resonance technologies. In concept, the slight differences of resonance signatures between the viral and human genes could be used to selectively target and eliminate infected parts of the cells, leaving uninfected normal cells unharmed. Boy,
wow.
That's what we really need. after studying the background work on the effects of the electromagnetic radiation on living systems, Dr. Todd commissioned a colleague with the expertise to design and build fundamentally a new laser electromagnetic resonance technology. This new laser optical technology had been patented worldwide, and Dr. Todd's invention is now being used in the potential and nutrients and offers alternative medicine and well-being a very bright future. So we have so much to learn today and so much to talk to Dr. Todd about. Welcome, Dr. Todd. You have just a walking miracle.
Well, thank you so much, Paula and Ted. It's a great pleasure being on with you, my first time in this particular venue. And it will be a great pleasure to share some of the road traveled, as it were, with you.
When you started to work with, when you went from the Western type of medicine and then you started working a little bit more with the alternative type that we call alternative anyway, did you know right away this is the avenue that you were going to be on for the rest of your time in medicine?
Well, it's probably more fair to say that even when I was in my medical training, I had the experience of seeing different types and forms of medicine working together very harmoniously. I had an amazing experience where I received a grant to go to India and work in a free clinic for villagers there. And it was quite extraordinary that I and others were conventional medical doctors with such training. And even some of those doctors in India had Ayurvedic training from their deep and ancient tradition in India. And then there were homeopaths and chiropractors and acupuncturists and a wide range of other fields represented that everyone just wanted to contribute the best of what they had, and it worked quite beautifully. So I had the experience, even when I was in medical school, that different types of modalities could work together, and it really became clear that it was possible to have a best of all worlds type of approach to health and wellness. That there are times where conventional medicine is absolutely the most appropriate and fastest path to a remedy or a cure. And then there are other situations when different modalities can be more supportive to the longer term structure and functional issues that can occur with various conditions. So I'd say what I became passionate about was really having an open mind and looking with as much scientific discernment as one could at the different approaches to therapies and providing the best fit for a given person in a given situation.
If you're looking at medicine here, the allopathy type of medicine, are you, if you start right away with this particular kind of medicine, do you see any difference compared to if you start right away with a holistic kind of approach? Some people are not always open to the holistic approach first because we've been conditioned in such a way that we, haven't known about this kind of alternative way. And so Do you see that many people are heading more to the natural direction, or are they still, falling in line and doing the regular medical approach?
Well, even the statistics show, and the reason the National Institutes of Health has sponsored a division supporting and doing research in the complementary medicine area, is that there is such a demand from the, I would call it, grassroots public to get all the alternatives that are available to them for a particular situation. And the percentage in a population-wide basis of people that have used or are using such modalities is quite high. It's been a few years since I've seen the statistics, but they're typically in the 30 to 50% range of the population. So that is quite a good sweep of the public that already is seeking such modalities.
Well, go ahead.
And to answer your initial question, comparing a strict allopathic approach to a more complementary one, one thing I would say is it can be even a little tricky to find the distinction. Now, when I went to medical school, I had a particular interest in nutrition and metabolism. And even when I was elbow to elbow with my fellow students and had some elective options, I took additional training in the nutrition and metabolism area. And that's really straight biochemical sciences. So from my perspective, for a given individual, if they have an acute health condition, it is usually the case that there will be a conventional that is ideal to be used and should be used immediately. There are other situations that are more kind of long-term general health issues where the use of nutrition, the use of particular metabolic suggestions, and there's general nutrition, like the food that people eat, but there are also specific micronutrients that can be given to the body to strengthen systems in a natural way. And to me, it typically makes sense if it's just general health or a mild emergence of a potential condition to use nutrition, metabolism, lifestyle modifications, such as all those things you consider healthy, lifestyle, eating well, having appropriate exercise and rest and recreation. But combining all that together often makes a tremendous difference. And to my mind, if there is an evolution where medication is the appropriate intervention, it's put into a situation where the body is well-balanced metabolically and everything tends to work better.
So you're actually saying that perhaps the digestive system is maybe where things fall down initially, maybe, and so it's a good way to support the system, making things work properly in that kind of environment. And does it support it on a more longer term once you get things into balance?
Right. For general health and for a variety of early possible conditions that could develop into something, simply changing what one eats, the way one eats, the more specific micronutrients, particularly vitamins, minerals, trace elements, and herbs and botanicals, as well as other more specialized cofactors, all of those things work directly with the intrinsic systems of the body and are a very natural and harmonious way to interact with the body. So digestion is critical to it, and often helping people improve their digestive situations, that alone will really result in improvement in condition. So does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Yeah.
Now, you were addressed the South African Natural Medicine Conference. They gave you ovations for your work with the HIV. What did you use for the HIV patients, and did you learn through your work with them?
There are a few aspects to that particular story. It was a great desire to help with the HIV epidemic that was the main reason that I switched from a purely conventional track to what I call really more of a type of a biomedical research track. And the ovation, as it were, or the particularly great interest in South Africa, which was a conference focused on HIV, the challenges, and the solution. And to give you a perspective on that, South Africa itself has 5 million persons infected with HIV. It's a large percentage of the population, and it's a very large number of people. So at that event, what we were highlighting was basic science work. And the concept that guided the work that followed emerged when I was in my advanced training doing intensive and critical care medical training, as well as studying the physiology and conditions of the lungs, so-called pulmonary training. There was this insight that the genetic material of HIV somehow folded differently than human genetic material, and that by virtue of a three-dimensional shape difference, there would be a difference in what is known physically as the natural frequency or resonance. So if that different shape resulted in a different vibrational frequency, that we could potentially discover that frequency, apply it to HIV, and with a simple non-intrusive measure that was not in any way toxic to the cells, but selectively, literally, like the crystal wine glass metaphor where the opera singer hits the right note and the glass shatters, hitting the right note so literally just HIV would disappear from infected cells and it could be relieved that easily. So based on that idea, the body of research began, and with the aid of my physicist colleague in Scotland, Scott Strachan, who was one of the co-inventors of real-time ultrasound. Of course, you know, that's where they put a little microphone on the abdomen, for example, and one can tell whether to paint the walls pink or blue if there is a baby on the way, that we developed a system using laser technology that was then combined with supercomputer technology to model the specific frequency modes of HIV. So that was the pure hardcore research side of it. When we then took that work to the University of Southern California with one of the scientists who wrote the initial HIV discovery paper from the National Institutes of Health, we found that applying the laser with those specific vibrational modes could literally cause HIV to disappear from the infected cells with no harmful effects upon the cells. So it was that work that I was sharing with the doctors and scientists in South Africa that really created a stir. I believe they described it to the effect of the image of a laser light literally shattering the virus and clearing it from the system.
So the frequency actually matched the disease, is what you're saying?
It matches particular parts of the virus that are unique to the virus and different from human tissue, that if those frequency notes are played, it literally alters and disrupts those parts of the virus so it no longer replicates.
Did they actually use this on HIV patients?
That work was not, or that kind of work, was not part of the discussion in South Africa. What has followed and has been incredibly exciting has been applying that frequency pattern, as it were, to a protocol of nutrients that are known in clinical studies to support immune recovery in HIV, as well as applying it to nutrients which have a natural supportive effect for the viral situation, particularly certain herbs from the Amazon, so that this combination that we call the immune support protocol that's been developed over the past 5 years is basically a type of supplement program that is given to persons with HIV. Now, from what's that?
It's like a double support. Yeah, it's nutritional plus frequency, huh?
It is exactly that. It is double support. It's combining both nutritional medicine, that includes botanical medicine, along with vibrational frequency medicine all rolled into one.
Can we use this method on cancer?
There certainly can be very profound and beneficial applications in that regard. In our earliest work at the NIH with one of my colleagues there, in fact, the actual very first study that we did was to shine the laser on a flask of human leukemia cells. And as you know, leukemia is an abnormal proliferation of white blood cells from the bone marrow. And this particular cell line is well and frequently used in research. When we applied the laser to the cells, there was the very remarkable observation that the behavior and the appearance of the cells reversed to look essentially normal. And that resulted sometimes from applying the laser for as little as about 5 to 15 minutes. When we then looked at the chemistry of the cells, very interestingly, we noticed that the molecules cancer cells use to hook to each other, well, basically, are diminished. So in a normal cell, you have molecules that are like Velcro that cause cells to stick together. In various types of cancer, those little Velcro hooks diminish in their number. So these are called cell adhesion molecules. And as the cell adhesion molecules reduce in number, cancer cells tend to be more malignant, more resistant to treatment, and more likely to spread. So it was very interesting that only did the cells return to a much more normal appearance and behavior, when we actually measured the physical chemistry on the cell surface, the cells which had diminished these adhesion molecules actually showed a significant increase, up to as much as a doubling of the actual number of those proteins on the surface of the cell. So we were, in a sense, reversing the time course of the process of the tumor cells not being able to stick to each other or talk to each other. So that's early work. It's basic science. Yet it's a very promising line of research, one that we hope to get back into and develop further.
So are you working with other countries on this, or...
This is very multinational. We have active research in South Africa, Kenya, Russia, and several other places.
How about the U.S.? Are we working with it here as well?
In the U.S., what is available are nutritional supplements for general health purposes and to strengthen particular organs and systems that have all been treated with this vibrational laser technology in special ways. Now, for some of those formulations, we have clinical studies showing strengthening of a variety of physical symptoms and structures. And those are available. So we do work of that sort in the United States, where we will see how a particular treated formulation will support the health of the immune system or the heart or the joints, for example. So that is what we are doing here. Internationally, we are tackling even bigger problems. In particular, in South Africa and Kenya, we have protocols of persons using the program I described for HIV with the laser-treated nutrients and herbs, and results have been very exciting for that.
Initially, was this done in a petri dish, or was it done, you know, with individuals and then checking the blood, or how was it done? And not only that, but then looking at the, okay, it treated the cells, and you saw the difference. However, did you see that it maintained itself after the frequency was applied?
That is an excellent question. In terms of the petri dish work, as you call it, or so-called test tube data or in vitro data is the term that scientists like to use, we saw that treatment with the laser could take sick appearing cells with the abnormalities being due to the presence of the viral infection. At the test tube level, we literally saw those sick appearing cells return to a much more normal appearance, basically nearly completely reversing the pathological effects of infection that are visible in the cellular structure. In those test tube studies, when we measured the production of the virus, the laser signal alone, without the specific added frequencies, could reduce the production of virus by about 80%. When we then added these frequencies that were developed by supercomputer calculations to model the difference in structure between the virus and the human chemistry, when we added that, we could actually show reduction of viral production to be low detectability. And with the unmodulated beam, the effect did tend to diminish over time, whereas with the modulated beam, the effect appeared to be more persistent. Does that answer that part of the question?
Yeah, I was just wondering, you know, how long the after effects would be, and, you know, you see everything diminishing, which is great. And, you know, does it maintain itself? Does it spread? I'm thinking, you know, okay, if this cell says it's okay now, and like you said, the cells unhook in some fashion. In other words, they don't keep the frequency of the cancer, so it unhooks itself and releases. And I wonder, by that one area, if it's when it releases, does it also release the others throughout the body, so it doesn't spread like malignancy, you know?
Now, are you speaking of the model in HIV or the model in malignancy right now?
Okay, so I don't know what an HIV cell looks like, so you're going to have to be...
Were you talking about cancer?
I was kind of thinking of cancer, you know, with where everything kind of spreads, and so I'm thinking if you're able to, for instance, just using like breast tissue or something, if you apply the frequency to there and you see that it is able to relax the frequency and make it go back to a normal viewing in maybe under microscopic view, and then if you're able to relax it in that area and you can see that it's changing, does it also change and release the hold it has throughout the body and other areas as well, because it just, you know, it's not necessarily always in that one area. It might be throughout the body as well.
Okay. I think there are a number of questions in there.
Okay, I'm so sorry.
I will address the very interesting questions that you're posing. And I can answer with respect to what we've seen in the test tube with HIV and in the test tube with tumor cells.
Okay.
With HIV, there are two major types of cells that get infected that are studied. The one type that is best known and is usually used to follow the condition is known as the CD4 lymphocyte, also called the T4 lymphocyte or the helper lymphocyte. And the changes in structure with infection are not as dramatic and actually relatively mild in comparison to what happens in the other type of cell, which are called monocytes. Now, monocytes are a type of cell that circulates in blood that will then cross into tissue and become even bigger cells called macrophages, and macro means big, and phage means to eat. So when monocytes go into tissue and become macrophages, they become big eaters. And those are the cells that will eat bacteria that have been covered with antibodies. They will clear up cellular debris if, say, tumor cells have been destroyed. And they will generally clean up any parts of the cell or debris in the cell that they recognize as being desirable to clean up. Mm-hmm. When monocytes get infected, they tend to have a very dramatic change in appearance. The cells become much bigger, the membrane becomes very wavy and ruffly, and then you see these big sacs or pouches all through the fluid of the cell, and under electron microscopy, those sacs are seen to be filled with virus that is developed, and it's going to become these gigantic, on a microscopic scale, manufacturing plants to make virus. So where we saw the most dramatic effects was when we treated the infected monocytes and saw an incredible reversion from the abnormal infected state to what the cells look like in the uninfected state.
Interesting.
Does it go back to the memory of the healthy cell?
That's the basic concept, correct. Now, you made a very interesting point with respect to malignant cells. And there's some very good work that was published in a paper written by Bissell and Weaver in the breast malignancy area. And this has to do with those proteins I was describing that are like Velcro between the cells that sticks the cells together. And a main class of molecules that has this function is called integrins. Integrins are given that name because they maintain the integrity of tissue by allowing the cells to stick together and for an organ to maintain its coherent pattern and function. In breast cancer, as the cells become more abnormal, they make less of the integrins, and then they develop more and more abnormal shapes, not just individually, but even in the larger three-dimensional organization. And what Bissell and Weaver showed, and was very interesting, using a method different from ours, they modulated and regulated the integrins back into a more normal situation. And doing that, they took large abnormal clusters of breast tumor cells and they literally reversed to a normal appearance.
Uh-huh.
And what we were doing with the laser was somewhat similar, a different method for instructing the cell to produce and creating the effect of a more normal ratio of those Velcro-like molecules. And we showed a similar effect, not in breast tumor, but in the leukemia-type cells, where before the laser, the cells are abnormal and rounded up and fisted up. And after the laser, they relaxed, they spread out, and they began to attach to the flask and move and appear like normal white blood cells again. So in both cases, whether this Lenlivre's method or ours, it was possible with tumor cells to reverse the abnormal appearance, both of individual cells in both cases, and even in the overall normal structure of larger groups of cells in breast tumors.
Have you seen this used on brain tumor? Because that tumor is a little bit different.
There is a great interest in applying the technology in that way. There are similar mechanisms in brain tumors, especially the most aggressive kind. And I would say that is a very promising area of development.
Are they actually, for instance, Russia, using this technology in hospitals there?
Not the laser technology as a direct therapeutic application. That is still in research phases. What we've been doing very intensively in Russia is doing double-blind clinical studies on various of the nutritional metabolic formulas for various health purposes. Now, in Russia, we have been doing the types of applications where we've even been approaching what would be the relief of medical conditions. And one of the most interesting studies done in Russia was a particular composition of amino acids. And I take it that you and your listeners know that amino acids are the building blocks that make the proteins in the body, and that there are 20 main amino acids that go into building the proteins, whether it's collagen in the skin or blood vessels, or muscle proteins, or skeletal proteins, or all the others that make up the body. Yet all of the many different types of proteins have those 20 building blocks. So this particular study created a ratio and composition of amino acids that were treated by the laser in a certain way, and these amino acids were given to persons with the condition of heart failure. And are you somewhat knowledgeable about that condition, or should I give you a little bit of background to understand what was done and the results?
I think that a little bit of background for our listeners would be great.
Good. So there are various reasons that the pump function of the heart becomes less efficient. The two commonest reasons are sustained high blood pressure that puts a strain on the heart, and the condition in which the arteries supplying the heart, the coronary arteries, become narrowed, most commonly from atherosclerosis. If the arteries of the heart become narrowed, at a certain point there may not be enough blood delivered to the heart for its function. And that then gets into what's known as ischemic heart disease, and ischemia means the tissue is not getting enough blood or oxygen to support its needs. So ischemia of the heart can present itself with a symptom known as angina, which is a chest pain due to the heart muscle not getting enough blood that forces someone to stop and rest and the pain goes away, which can progress all the way to an actual heart attack where part of the muscle becomes damaged. So the commonest causes of a failing heart are a combination of ischemic heart disease or prolonged elevated blood pressure, or both of them together. And this particular study, which was of moderate size for a nutritional metabolic type study with 50 subjects, all 50 of the subjects had heart failure on the basis of both ischemia and elevated blood pressure. So it's a very representative of the commonest causes of that condition. Now, when the pump is adversely affected in this way, the typical change in the heart is that the heart dilates. So the more the bigger the chamber of the heart beyond normal, the more it reflects impaired function of the heart. And the other main factor is that the efficiency, which is the percentage of the blood the heart pumps out and contracts, gets lower and lower as the heart failure is more severe. So a normal heart will pump out 50% or more of the blood with each contraction. If it drops below 50%, it's considered mild heart failure. And if it drops all the way to less than 30%, it's considered severe heart failure. And the study group, on average, began with what would be in the moderate heart failure range. And what was very, very interesting was that simply giving the laser-enhanced amino acids, that the first thing that was noticed was that within 10 days, collagen production in the body increased very significantly. It was almost double the baseline production and almost double compared to placebo just 10 days after starting, which was an indicator of beginning to rebuild tissues and structures and function. And what was very, very interesting is that by the end of the study, which was a 30-day period, that the persons in the treated group actually had significant reversal of the abnormal dilation of the heart. The swollen hearts actually shrunk down to a much more normal size. And the percentage of blood ejected, called the ejection fraction, also improved very significantly.
So the elasticity in the arteries themselves became more strong. Is that what you're saying, actually?
Well, collagen was increased, which would strengthen the heart, the blood vessels. Persons with joint issues also noted that their joints were getting better. So it would be a strengthening of the tissues in a general way of what was being examined by our research colleagues in Russia, with most specifically the dynamics of the function of the heart.
Now, are these the amino acids that you're talking about, are they available here? That formula?
Let me say this. In Russia, the Russian FDA has approved that particular formula for a use in heart failure because the improvement in heart function exceeded the criteria for an effective stem cell treatment. And there was a very, not only significant improvement in the efficiency of the pump function and the heart returning to a normal size, people felt and functioned a whole lot better. So in the United States, it is, we're not allowed to make such claims, and the company that is doing the research in this area that I am the founder of provides a range of amino acid formulas. So what I can say is that there are amino acid formulas available that are treated with the latest technology that have the purpose of supporting the health structure and function of various systems, including the heart.
Wow. I kind of question after what you're saying. I kind of question after what you're saying is that maybe this would also go into the capability of working with lung tissue and asthma, lung issues, you know, for breathing and stuff too. Is this the case? I mean, it seems like the amino acids that you have maybe gives a lot of people have the inability to digest protein, so maybe it doesn't go into the system. I mean, you know, for nutritive factors. So by supplying an amino acid of this quality, does it support heart, lung issues, and things like that as well?
The amino acids are so generally quite important. It will support those systems and provide very good support.
Yeah.
Now, for the lung in particular, there is an amino acid known as L-arginine. And this is so important and significant that a Nobel Prize was awarded in 1998 to three American researchers for looking at the pathway where the body takes arginine and converts it to something known as nitric oxide. And this is a very natural way, it's part of the body's normal system for dilating blood vessels throughout the body so tissues get good blood flow, and it also supports normal and healthy blood pressure. In addition, this will help to maintain the normal dilation or opening of the various bronchial tubes and pathways. And studies have shown that appropriate intake levels of arginine are related to supporting various healthy levels of dilating the bronchial tubes for ease of breathing.
Wow.
So the company that you founded, they have formulas that help support the body. And do you want to give out the website for that company right now, and then we'll give it before we leave?
Sure. That was a very kind invitation of you. The name of the company is called Gematria, G-E-M-A-T-R-I-A, and the website would be then gematria.com. And given your listeners, would you like to know the three root definitions of that term?
Yes, that was going to be one of my questions.
Very good. So the most ancient use of that term, the pronunciation was different. The pronunciation was gematria. And that was the system used in the ancient mystery schools where the letters in words would be converted into numbers, and then the pattern of the numbers would be decoded into another level of information. And this was the way that mystery schools could have one level of writings, but then a much deeper level of interpretation. So it's about converting information from one form to another, much as we're converting frequency information to effects in molecules. Then you and your listeners are probably well aware of an amazing and very esoteric book called The Keys of Enoch, The Book of Knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
By the author J.J. Hertak. And in the glossary of that book, the definition of gematria is something to the effect of: gematria is the science of determining the input energy required to build a body of consciousness. So it's also about energy and information and building high levels of consciousness. And then the third and most recent definition is that gematria are higher dimensional waveform representations that interact in matrices to create physical reality. So it's also about the relationship between intention and the way reality itself is manifested.
Now, have you seen the change of DNA as the consciousness level rises? I mean, does DNA change?
Well, that, of course, is an excellent question. And there is an amazing discussion that is evolving around DNA and how it is changing as we evolve into our next level of civilization. And there is the esoteric, the metaphysical side of the equation, where there is the discussion of some deeper dimensional layers and levels of action of DNA. And these are the sorts of things that there really is not physical equipment to measure. So it really stays in the realm of that which is esoteric. And as you know, there are intuitives and people with high sensitivity that believe they can perceive how DNA may shift or change at that level, but that's more of a higher perception than anything that can be proven scientifically. And on the other hand, there's an incredible new area called epigenetics. And one of my good friends is a Dr. Bruce Lipton, and I believe he may even have been one of your guests.
Yes, he has.
And Dr. Bruce Lipton has been one of the great pioneers in the area, and of course his first book, The Biology of Belief, is very well circulated and well read, and it describes the versatility of how DNA may work depending upon the environment that it gets put into. So, for example, there may be a condition, a set of genetic switches that go along in a family tree that could predispose persons in that line and the descendants to particular types of health conditions. And what's been shown in epigenetics is that changes in lifestyle, changes in diet, taking on the practice of meditation, and even literally just changing a belief about something acts at a physical level in DNA to some way alter not the linear code itself, but alters what part of the code is expressed, so that, in essence, through belief and intention and lifestyle, one can change the actual switches in DNA, and particularly through intention, turn off something that potentially could result in an undesirable condition. And what's most amazing is that if a person does this, it's not just for them, that also can be transmitted to their next generation.
Oh, wow. That's heavy.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah. But supposedly we all are one, so as we make this transition, it's a fluidness of, it's kind of like the tissue within our own body that you're talking about, you know, the frequencies. If you alter one section of your body, can it carry that frequency? Can it hold it and maintain,
and
you know, the change, you know?
And we affect people around us as we change, sounds like.
Oh, well, definitely. There is that notion of quantum entanglement, which basically means that once quantum particles interact, they become more than individual particles. They become an interacting system that is said to be entangled. And if we, in fact, are entangled in awareness with our global brethren, that as any one person makes a particular positive shift, it's not only an effect for that person, it actually influences everyone else and makes it easier for the shift for everyone else also. So this idea that we have a field that creates an influence, especially if we are working to create a higher vibrational state and higher awareness, that positive influence can extend perhaps much farther and more positive than we even appreciate at this point.
Now,
you must get up in the morning. I was going to say, you must get up in the morning and just kind of go jump up and down, or even at night. I can just see, this is so exciting. You know, somebody got it, or the changes and the alteration. It must be exciting for you each day. I mean, living
is,
in this kind of...
It is absolutely thrilling. Yeah, it's true. When people say, what you're doing, how do you even sleep at night? Well, the answer is, I tend not to. It's just too exciting.
All these ideas just swarm in. Now, the laser treatment that you're doing on the, for example, on amino acids and your different formulas, that is a resonance of that laser formulated into like a love resonance?
In the broadest terms, you certainly could say that in addition to what is transmitted at the physical level of laser photons and frequency modulation, in the bigger concept, it is also a wave of love, peace, serenity, compassion, and expansion of awareness.
So you can actually visualize, as you're taking the formulas, the vitamins, love, peace, harmony, and you're swallowing it and actually have it inside of you. That would be a wonderful thought.
And amplify the effects by having that intention. Definitely.
Well, let's give out your...
Okay. I was going to say, well, that's...
Go ahead.
I was going to say, let's let people know we've been talking with Dr. Todd, and his website is gematria.com, and that's G-E-M, like gem, maybe, G-E-M-A-T-R-I-A.com, that's G-E-M-A-T-R-I-A.com, and do you have a phone number?
Yes, we have a toll-free number, which is 888-838-8877.
Okay.
One more time.
And, yeah, 888-8...
So lots of eights and sevens, right? So go, please. I'll let you do it.
Okay, 888-838-8877. And one more time, 888-838-8877. And you can head to his website. I'm sure there must be a contact tab on the website as well if you want to contact him that way. And you can also look at the formulas and everything that's that you like. And we've got a couple, maybe about a minute and a half. Dr. Todd, is there anything that you want to say that we might not have covered or something?
The one thing that I would say is that we have a particular and passionate interest in the brain and how well it works, and that many of the forms, including the original formula, are really about enhancing and balancing the chemistry of the brain. So if people have an interest in that arena, that's certainly one thing we would suggest they take a look at on the site.
And that would help people from having dementia. So many people our age fear that. So that sounds like those formulas would help keep the mind clear.
Yeah, keep the body healthy so it can function right.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Dr. Todd. And we're going to most certainly have you back because you're just full of information that everyone needs to hear.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a great pleasure joining you, and thank you for the opportunity.
And everyone, head to our website. If you were driving and you weren't able to copy down any numbers or anything, our website, the TazandPaulaShow.com, has the information about Dr. Todd on it also.
So it's Taz, T-A-Z-Z, and is spelled out. So it's www.TazandPaulaShow.com. Thank you. We'll be back with another great show next week. And many blessings to all of you.
And blessings to you, Dr. Todd.
And blessings to you, and thank you all very much.
You're quite welcome.